Welcome to another brand new episode of the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake.
I'm going in blind today, Jake. I have no idea what you have.
I mean, in a way, I am as well. Episode 9 are we on?
I think it's 9.
Yeah. Coming off the back of Rich Relish.
Dude, I'm still buzzing after that last week's episode. If you haven't heard it already, head to theblackartco.com or look in the playlist here. Yeah, what an insight. What a genius Rich Relish is.
It's great. You should see all the signatures that people are requesting for him to replace me permanently.
Oh, how many are there?
None, thankfully.
Good. I say I'm going into this blind for two reasons. A, because I have no idea what you have in store for us today. B, because it's been like the first day of summer, so I've got a very red, burnt face to everyone watching on YouTube. And I feel like I'm blinded by the sun.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it might have to be like a tight hour or so. Purely because I accidentally wasted an hour of Lloyd's time.
It was not wasted. We talked about some really intriguing methods, which will come to light soon enough.
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully.
I want to know something, though. Jake said that he may not be firing on all cylinders today.
Definitely not.
because we don't like to do the general 10 minutes, 15 minutes of talking about how our lives are at the start of a podcast. We like to get into the nitty gritty and the juice of things, but you did say that you are concussed and I need to know why and how.
Yeah, it's the stupidest reason as well, man. I was cleaning the sink in my bathroom and my doorbell went and no one was there. It was someone had pressed the doorbell and ran away like the local hoodlums enjoy doing. But the sound scared me because it's that infrequent that someone rings my doorbell. I turned my head a little bit too quickly and smashed my head into the side of the door frame quite along here.
No.
And I am slightly
concussed. Oh, friend!
Yeah. A visitor? At this hour?
I must get some pants on.
Yes. Oh no, it wasn't. It wasn't just pants. It was the full shebang. I only clean in the nude.
It's the only way to clean.
Exactly. But there was a solid 45 minutes where I was seeing stars and wanting to vomit. So I'm not all there at the moment. I've got some kind of a American football CTE injury, I think.
Well, it could. We don't know. It could be a catalyst for. I know, like, a lot of people tend to like do drugs and stuff to get creative, and you're not doing drugs, so I don't think.
No, maybe you are. No, not well.
This concussion could be it.
It could be it. Or it could go the exact opposite way when you look up the statistics about, you know, 79% of serial killers started killing when they had a major injury to their head. It could go the opposite way.
Is that true?
I'm a mentalist. We make up statistics, so.
do love it. Do you know that if everybody alive on planet Earth held hands around the globe, most of them would drown?
Well done. Okay. Tiny little clap.
Thank you for your tiny Jeremy Beadle hands. What's in store for us today?
Oh, not an exciting. No, so recently I've been working on this project and it's kind of led me to go down some old notes. Don't worry, I'm not going to make you go through my childhood notes again.
Shane Beer was the best set of notes I've ever read, just for the record.
But I did come across some stuff that I know you're into as well. So I thought it was kind of an interesting point of conversation. And it was about childhood games. Specifically, it was about the fact that, you know, ritualistic style games that kids would play. I mean, I think the most commonly known, just because of pop culture, is stuff like Bloody Mary and Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. What's Bloody Mary?
I know what Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board is, but I don't know what Bloody Mary is.
Well, you stand in a mirror and say Bloody Mary three times at a sleepover, and she comes and kills you.
Oh, like Candyman, Candyman, Candyman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, I just said that into a mirror.
Oh, Candyman is five times, so don't worry.
Oh, good. Well, luckily, I can't count to five. I get all woozy headed around three in a bit. I'm like,
Shout out to Candyman, by the way, just because the original novella is set down the road from me.
No, was it really?
Yeah, Clive Barker originally wrote it set in Toxteth in Liverpool because he's a Scouser.
Wow. The guy who wrote Blade Runner styled it on Talbot Steelworks, apparently, the cityscapes.
That's pretty
apparently.
Cool.
Mm. I digress.
No, it's cool. Nice.
Candyman. I've lost count. I'm gone.
So this like kind of ritualistic gameplay is really, really interesting to me, because if you look at it from the view of someone who practices a little bit of, you know, mentalism, a lot of these type of games, especially some of the ones I'm going to speak about, involve influence and suggestion. So one of the ones where there's a ton of regional variations, you know, whether it's in the States or even just different, you know, Wales and England have got different versions, I'm pretty sure. But it's like the game you would play where you run your finger along someone's back and say, dot, dot, line, line, spiders running up your spine, light breeze, tight squeeze. Now you've got the shiveries. These like weird games.
We used to do snakey on your back, which finger did that? And you'd have to guess which finger poked them.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of game we mean?
Yeah. I think the Americans have a crisscross applesauce. Is a variation on it. And the one where someone cracks an egg on your head. Did you ever do that when you were a kid?
With like your fist and you...
Yeah, and the yolk runs down.
Mm.
But these are all like sensory games. And it's really interesting from the perspective of how, you know, that's pseudo-hypnosis and hypnosis. There is... what is his name? Is it Aaron Alexander who recently released Psychic Surgery?
I know the trick. I'm not sure of the guy's name 100%, but where you cut someone, slice someone's arm down the forearms, apparently, not actually.
So I remember playing that game when I was a kid on the schoolyard, and I think the premise to it was you're stranded on a desert island with a serial killer, and he chops off your arms and replaces stuff with sticks and stones. I remember there was a part where you lay down and someone traces a finger across your forehead and says that he's removing the top of your skull and putting sand in it, and they tap on your head, and then they put the skull back, and when you sit up, your head feels heavier. This is all like pseudo-hypnosis tricks we used to do when we were kids.
I remember the one which was really effective, and I think I've seen Blaine do it on TV, but it's super old. It's the holding your two fingers apart, you know? So for anyone who can't see on the screen, you clasp your hands together like a prayer, but closed fingers, so interlaced. And you point out, it used to be your two middle fingers. You point out your two middle fingers and hold them apart about an inch. And it's just very hard to do that. Or it's harder than you think. And you tell them you're going to make their fingers come together and touch. And you pretend that you're doing it with shadows from across the room. And they will eventually just come in and touch tips together.
Touch tips together. Beautiful.
What's so funny about touching tips?
It's what I was doing last night.
Yes, the tips.
it's like the way you would push your arms up against the wall and then you took a step back and your arms will rise.
So you want to know the dumbest thing I ever did as a kid? I am at the bottom end of the bell curve for intelligence. And so the first time I found that out, somebody held my arm. This is true on my child's life, or my son Thomas's life. So the first time I found out, someone held my arms by my sides. Count to 30 as I'm trying to push out. And after 30, they let go. I relax and your arms will naturally float up. I thought that was amazing. I then did it with one arm, my right arm, then did it with my left arm, then did it with my right leg, did it with my left leg, so it can still work in a weird way if you're elevated off one foot. And then I genuinely tried to do it with two legs at the same time. And I really thought I was going to float. And it took me, and I remember there was one of these like really embarrassing childhood memories I have of realizing that obviously it wouldn't work. Like that thing, have you ever stood in a bucket and tried to pick it up yourself in it?
I was just about to say.
One of those situations, but I was down the rabbit hole.
I remember being a kid and thinking, man, why has no one thought of this before? Oh, and if I ever fell from a height, I'd just jump off something just as I'm about to reach the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always thought, if I was in an airplane crash, I would grab onto the wings and right as I'm about to hit the ground, I'd jump up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The reason you think things like this and we play these kind of games is that like sense of play, which also people get back when you show them magic.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I know it's a bit of a cliche about your imagination going away once you pass bloody 30 or something, but there is a lot of truth in the concept of people being a little bit too thinking that they'll
serious
appear silly if they play.
Yeah. I absolutely adore the idea of getting people to get involved in like a childhood game,
mm-hmm,
in the context of magic and then tying it up magically.
It hits so many spots because you've got the nostalgia, the recognition. Oh, I remember doing this. Oh, it still works. Oh, we'll laugh at them. You know, they're doing it to so-and-so. That's funny. I remember this. It's a cheerful, like, joyous little occasion where everyone has a bit of playing imagination restored to them. I absolutely adore the idea of basing routines around that. Where yes, you do this completely, you know, something that you would do on the schoolyard, and then you say, oh, you think that's good? Have you tried this one before? And you launch into your fictional one where it's, you know, oh, back in 18th century, the kids would do this thing where they blah, 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 blah.
I remember really trying, me and my friend Wilson, who now lives in Vietnam, I'm actually going to go stay with him or visit him in October. But we went through this phase of when he first got the internet before like anyone I knew. And we used to go on to like these old magic ritual websites. And we genuinely, like, my mum will confirm, we tried pouring salt around in a circle and getting the rain to pour in the garden. We definitely did light as a feather, stiff as a board, trying to get it to work. Never got it to work properly. I think that one can work though, can't it?
Yeah.
But I never got it to work properly. There was just two of us, so it was kind of
tricky. No, you need like 4 or 5 people.
Yeah, we were too embarrassed to tell anyone that we were doing that stuff. But it was a big craze and a big phase that we went through. We were really into it, burning incense sticks because we were 14, thinking we were, I don't even know. So, with that in
literally
mind,
still incense sticks on my windowsill there, but okay.
I don't take it back. But so, where would you go in with it then?
Well, that's the beauty of a topic like this. I didn't really know. I just thought it was interesting, and I love the idea of like it was Aaron Alexander. I had to look it up, but he has released work on this before. About reality as an art, I think his publication is called, or okay, it may have been retitled. But if you look up Aaron Alexander, it'll come up. He has a ton of work on accepting like the mental state of play as an adult and how this is used in influence or mentalism or magic. And he has absolutely tons of work on the subject. It's so interesting. And I love the idea of that shared recognition. I mean, if you go up to someone and ask them about, you know, 2 or 3 of these things, there's going to be one that they attempted when they were a kid in a schoolyard.
Yeah.
And anything where there's a universal recognition is powerful. Like, but whenever I'm creating something, I want there to be at least one universal truth in it. And it's when people recognize something, they will usually, you know, if it's like a joyful kind of thing, just the act of recognizing it kind of gives them an affinity to what's happening right there and then. And it's getting them on your side so much earlier, before even anything has happened. It's getting them on your side because there's an affinity, there's like this recognition there. It's great.
I love the idea of like the going back to the first one, like snakey on your back. I don't know what it is, you know. But for anyone that doesn't know what this is, your friend would stand behind you, and they'd say, "Close your eyes," even though there's no point. And then they would draw in Wales at least, they would draw the shape of an S or a snake on your back, and they'd say snakey on your back, and they do it with an index finger or something, which finger did that. And as you time it for the word that, you poke them in the back with your thumb, index finger, middle finger, ring or pinky, and they would have to guess which finger it was. And I'd love, wouldn't it be such a great piece of magic to say, we're going to play this game, close your eyes, I'm going to stand behind you, snakey on your back, which finger did that? And as they open their eyes, you're right in front of them.
Mm.
Actually, that could be doable, right? Because you could just tap them from here. What if you were right in front of them, but like 20 feet in front of them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, with PK touches, there's been tons of electronic devices in use. So it's Spectre Touch, is it? I don't know. There's a bunch out there. the stuff like that could be really fun. If that's the theme of your performance is to do with these things and then kind of bringing some of them to life more so than the usual influence and pseudo-hypnosis there is in them, you could do some really cool stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to do with seeing color as well. I remember when I was a kid, the drawing shapes on the back, I remember there being this whole like ritualistic long one that was done where it was like dot dot line and going through this whole spiel, and you kept saying concentrate, and then they'd say now you're pushed off a cliff or something, and they push you forward and you stumble, and they say open your eyes and what's the first color you can see, and apparently whatever color you could see first was how you would die. Because kids are just morbid like that. So it was, you know, if you saw black, that means you'll die of old age. If you saw red, that means an horrific accident. But isn't it weird how sinister some of these kids' games were?
Yeah, I would lie and say, I seen the color chocolate. Oh, and death by chocolate.
there's a real sinister undertone to all of this. Like, I love how occultish and rich-based.
It's like one of those, I mean... It's not until you're older that you realize like, how like morbid, like even simple things are. Like a game of Hangman, you have to guess the word whilst drawing somebody being hanged.
Yeah,
it's crazy. What you think about it, like now, imagine it was like what some countries do, like death by lethal injection. So we, death by lethal injection, man. Like, no, you're playing that in school.
You're filling in the serum for the syringe with the letters.
yeah. But there's got to be, I can't think of one. But it'd be so cool to do a game based on Hangman. If there was more consequence to it. You know, like, or if they didn't know. I don't know where I'm going with it, but, you know, I'm just thinking that they play the game innocently with you. They end up getting it right with the exact amount of letters in play. And then, you know, you show them that actually you were secretly live streaming it. And every time they got a letter wrong, you were putting $100 in a fire. You know what I mean? And they just happen to get every letter right or something like that.
Yeah.
Or flip it on its head completely where like they get every single letter wrong. Oh no, they get like five letters right and the rest wrong. So you end up like with this weird half shape of a hanging, like, I don't know what they call, like a
gallows
pole. Not the noose, but like the equipment to hold it.
The gallows.
But then like you connect the lines through the noose and it draws an image of a reveal or something.
Oh, there could definitely be a reveal there, couldn't there?
Yeah. So they think it's going to be a traditional hangman game and then it ends up like, oh, look, actually, if you fold the paper in half, and you line up the dashes with these, it actually spells something else. Or
I just love the idea that incorporating any of this stuff into a routine is like a tool, because instantly they're with you. They're like, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I've said for a long time, I honestly think that if the coin from ear could be the best trick of all time if you had like a great version of it. Because it's or something from behind the ear. I think it's the most globally recognized piece of magic.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about last week, I think it was, adding context to make things more understand, so that the audience can understand how impossible what you're about to do is.
Yeah.
Because then you could say, do you remember a relative reaching behind your ear and pulling a coin out, and have you ever done it? Have you ever learned how to do it? And they're going to say yes. And I'm like, oh, well, look, as I really got into magic, I realized, you know, make up some spiel about how you can do it for real, or it's actually the oldest trick in the book. And there's a way people do it as a trick, but this is the way you do it for real. And then like, you know, open palm, reach behind their head and pluck their ear as you bring a coin into thing. I just think it would be the most magical experience if it you know, laying the groundwork first and then like rolling your sleeves up, showing your hands completely empty, and then you plucking a coin from the ear. It's got that, it's a tactile thing as well. It's not actually a visual trick, which is nice, because a lot of magic is primarily visual, but actually your hand goes out of sight, but it's tactile because they're going to feel you pluck the ear.
The I have a real affinity for that as well. I remember one time staying in a like this little cabin in Scotland, and it was gorgeous. There was a little wooden shed that was outside for chopping up the firewood, and had this big fire. There was like no TV in the sitting area, just with about five or six mates, just having a great time. And I remember talking about magic to one of my friends, and the other guy next to him was kind of cottoning on what I was leading towards, because I was talking about pulling the coin behind the ear. So as I reach behind my friend's ear, my other mate just passes me a coin behind his head. It's so good.
I'm such a lone ranger when I perform. I'm always trying to think of ways to do that. Like, I created a way with a contest I was someone to make a coin appear in the spectator's hand. Mm. So they literally make the coin appear in the hand. I won't discuss it on here. It's a much longer thing. It had a small touch from somebody else's, from an old idea.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get into it. I think I've might shared it before, but I had some, along that journey to creating that coin appearing in someone's hand, I had some other interesting thoughts. And one of them was to use a coin shell. All right. So one of the ways this could be achieved is that you have a coin nested in a shell. So you can show your hands empty. And I would ask someone to hold their hands out like two plates, you know, so flat in front of them for people who can't see. And I'd have the coin openly in my hand here. And then I would come up and underneath, I would, so this shell would be so that it could drop this way. So the shell is facing towards the ground.
Yeah.
And there'd be some double stick tape on the back of the coin here.
Yeah.
So I would say, I'll bring your hands a little bit higher. I would stick the coin from inside the shell onto the back of their hand. And then as I'd come down, the shell would come away into my hand. I'd flip it over and they can still see the coin. So from their point of view, I've held a coin. I say, oh, just hold your hands up like this. Yeah, a little bit higher. And the coin is still there. But now they don't realize. And it works. It does work. And you can try it. You just make sure the coin's been in your pocket. So it's body temperature.
Yeah.
Because you'll feel the cold. But it works. It works really well. But now they have a coin loaded and stuck to the back of their hand. It's quite a powerful position to be in, to have a spectator with the coin stuck to the back of their hand and have no concept of it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking you could do it with the first of all, okay, I should have one around you somewhere. I was thinking with the coin in ear, you could do something similar. Do you ever used to play that game, or sort of like a prank, where you would say you're going to stick a coin to somebody's head?
Yeah.
And they'd have to slap to get that. It off.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It was really cool, actually. I'm going to see if I can show the camera. Here goes. So I actually have a perfect set right now. So for anyone that doesn't remember this, there's a good prank you can do to people where you take a coin and you stick it on their forehead. And then you say, or you stick it on your own forehead to begin. So yeah, I'm sticking the coin on my forehead and I want you, I'm going to slap myself in the back of the head until it falls off. The winner is whoever can keep it, whoever can knock it off in the least amount of taps. So then you gently tap a few times, and then like on the sixth time, you know, it falls off. And then then the prank is you say, I'll stick it to your head, and you stick it on to the middle of their forehead, but you secretly pull it away. But because you impress it and push down a bit, it feels like it's there. It's a crazy feeling, but it feels like it's on your forehead. And so the gag is kind of like balls over the head style gag, where now they think they have a coin in their head and they're just slapping themselves in the back of the head. And this coin, because it's not there, won't fall off. But the interesting part is the moment where they think they have a coin on their head, because they can't feel it. Or they can feel it. So I thought, I have a little coin shell here. I have a one penny coin shell. But I thought it'd be cool to do the opposite of that. So you talk about, I'm not going to go into the whole script or whatever you could say or not. But what's nice is that I can show a singular coin like this. I can push it onto their head so they can feel it there. I don't know if this is going to stick now. And then pull the shell away. But I can still show a coin. Yeah, that didn't stick. I probably need some double stick tape or something. But now they have a coin on their forehead. I was just panicking. I dropped the coin. And I literally, because I have exposed floorboards, I've lost like some really expensive coins through the floorboards lately. Had a minor panic attack. Yeah, but the interesting thing now is that because they see you, you say, look, maybe you explain the whole premise, blah, 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 that it's a prank. And then they see you very cleanly bring one coin to their forehead. They could even probably look at themselves in the mirror for a moment. And then you bring that same one coin away, but they felt you push it in, but they now really believe that they are in on the prank.
Yeah.
but now they have a coin stuck on their head, which is really interesting as a place to be in, because you could do a number of different things. You could have, like, instead of going on the route of having them tap themselves on the back of the head, you could change the topic. And as long as it's, like, upright, the coin should stick longer than if they're looking down, because of the way friction generally tends to work. I don't have a sticky head for the reason. But what you could do then, you could change the topic and then say, look, I want you to do this. Imagine taking a coin, imagine flicking it in the air, look up, and then look down as you catch it, and that coin would fall off their forehead into their own hands. You could be on the other side of the room. So now they have a coin appear from nowhere in their hands. So it's like flick, they look up, and they come down, and it just falls off their forehead. Or you could just say, look, I'm going to take this coin, do a French drop. I'm going to pass it through my brain, and it's going to appear on your head. And they reach up and they just pluck it off their own forehead. You know, it reminds me of a funny story as a side note. When we went on a guy's holiday to Spain, and on the first day I got drunk by the pool, and the guys shaved my eyebrows off and then threw me in the water. And then they all had to jump in and rescue me because I didn't wake up. And so to get the main instigator back, my friend, when he was sleeping, I shaved a 1x1 inch square in the back of his head and super glued a penny to his head. But I did it I got his hands and I moved them, because he was out cold, obviously drunk, sleeping, to the position where he would wash and not wash his hair. So I stuck it into the place where I thought he wouldn't feel it. And he didn't feel it for 3 days, even though he was showering. Jeez. And then it got really hot one day. And he was like, why is my head hot? And then he ripped it off and a little bit of skin came with it. It was really funny. I was like, well, you shaved my eyebrows. I constantly look like I'm questioning everything.
You know, when I was a lot younger, one of my favorite things to do, there's zero context to the trick. There's not much to it whatsoever. But because I was a little bit taller than some of the other kids in my class, I'd have a penny just on the top of my head.
Yeah.
And then have the penny appears when you just tilt forward. Like if they have their hands cupped and you're showing your hands empty, and then the penny just drops down. Obviously you could do something where the coin isn't on their head and they're tapping it. And you've got your hands in front of them saying that you're going to catch it, or they've got their hands saying that they're going to catch it. And there's got to be something you could do where, you know, where it gets to the point where they're like, something's up now. And then you lean forward so that the penny actually does fall from your head into their hands.
That's good.
You could just keep it going on so long.
I love that coin off the top of the head thing, by the way. I think that's such an underrated piece of magic. When done correctly. But what you could do is you could say, I'm going to stand on the other side. You know the backwards thumb clip, and you can show your palm empty. So for everyone not watching on YouTube, it's a coin in like thumb clip. But imagine I'm holding my hand up like a high five, but with all my fingers tightly together, including my thumb pushed together. So my hand's completely flat as if I was photocopying it. And I'm going to wedge a coin in between my thumb and the flesh of my hand. But my hand now gets empty. But you can put that down. You can now place your hand towards the ceiling and turn to the side, and they won't see it. Your hand will look empty. It's a really good position. I know David Stone does a lot of amazing work. Tobias Dawson does some good stuff with this. But what you could do is you could get your hand into this position and then say, you're going to hit that coin and it's going to travel across the room and into my hand. 3, 2, 1. They hit it, and then you do the move where the coin just drops from the thumb into your bare open palm. So it can, instead of it could be like one of those faux stunts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's enough there to piece together this like 3 or 4 phase routine. From nothing. That's great.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could convince them. No, you couldn't. You could. I mean, it's all fun and games, right? Magic doesn't always have to be so serious. But you could just say, on the count of three, I want you to just... like a coin going into a soda can or coin into a bottle, you're going to slap that coin into your brain and you go bing. As they do it, you could cough it out of your mouth. Because as long as they just believe the coin's on their forehead, or you could do it in a different way, which is you use the coin shell to load the coin, but it's an indifferent coin. And then you force a different kind of coin. So they think they have a penny on their head. And secretly, they actually have like a quarter or a 10 pence piece in the UK. So you say, that penny stuck to your head, but I want you to imagine it turning into a different kind of coin, something like a 50p, but not a 50, different, maybe different complete color, something you'd recognize, you know, so they hopefully guide them to. a 10 pence piece. You say, so like, this is the best trick in the world. I'm not I'm going to come anywhere near you. You're just think, or just think of a different coin. Imagine that penny changing. You're going to feel it change on your head. And the moment it changes, hold your hands out. It's going to pop off your forehead. They're going to make it pop off by raising their eyebrows probably. And then they see it as a different coin. You could use like digital force bag to force the other coin too.
This is so fun. Just like the most childish stuff that is, you could still pull off really well.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite things when you is like the carnival strength test stuff.
Yes.
So you know the one you do where you've got someone in on it and you have your arms outstretched like that with your fists, and you say you can't lift someone up like this. They attempt it on you and they can't do it because their arms are outstretched. There's no leverage.
Yeah.
If their arms are underneath your, like in your armpits, but then you do it to them and you just have someone run up behind them and lift up your fists.
Yeah.
And they get so annoyed that they can't do it back to you, especially if it's like a bigger guy.
there's something in that, isn't there?
I love it so much.
That's a good trick on its own.
It is. It's just fun. There is a whole market, not in the sense of selling stuff, but I mean, just these silly people interested party tricks.
I like taking these party tricks
over games.
That's what it is, isn't it?
Hmm.
Like, have you seen, what's the film that it's from? But where you do the coin from the hand switch, you're like, I'm going to be faster than you. I remember playing that with kids loads when I was younger, trying to steal the coin. The idea of actually being able to switch it was alien. I thought that was like just a bit they made in the movie, but you can really do that, you know?
Yeah.
And we think we spoke about that last week.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. It's just so easy.
Yeah, it's basically self-working.
And they legitimately believe that they can close their fingers faster than you. But it just always works. If you're doing it right, it just always works. It's insane.
There's a tutorial on my YouTube for a cool version of it. But yeah, all you need to do is have a coin in back heel clip that you're going to switch in and then just go for the other coin. And it generally works. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, you don't even have to think about where this is going. All you're focusing on is picking up the other coin from their hand before they can close it. And it just works.
I'm going to teach that to my kid when he goes to school and he's going to clean up.
Yes.
People just don't know about this stuff.
Yeah, it's like, well, when we were talking about the pendulum last week as well, so many people like sent me messages saying, dude, does that actually work? I was like, yes.
Yeah, I tried it after, man. It totally works. It's bizarre.
It's crazy.
It's completely idiomotor bizarre.
Movements.
I want to know about more of this stuff. If anyone's listening and they got this far, then comment down below some of the like cool schoolyard type party, not games, but like, I don't know, like
baby rituals.
It's almost like at home illusions in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I wonder how else we can expand on them. But that's a great opening topic, pardon me. There comes the broccoli I had for dinner. The Brock. Barack Obama. What do you have anything else?
You know what? No, it was kind of just something that I was wanting to talk about because I've been thinking about it whilst I've been planning some other stuff. And I just thought it was interesting. I know that you are into like childhood games being used as a presentational quirk.
Yeah. So I remember the one game where you would like to find out who you love. You'd write down their name. You'd write down your name. You'd write down so-and-so's name. Like Jake loves Lloyd. And then you would cross out the letters and you would add them up together. Yeah. And wouldn't you do something like I don't even know. And then by the end of it, the total was the compatibility.
Mm.
It was something like you work out how many of the same letters are in the word loves, isn't it? Is that it? Right. So Jake loves Lloyd.
Yeah.
And then in Jake, there's a E, which is in loves because there's an E in loves. And in Lloyd, there's an L-L-O. So you'd have one, I'd have three. And then you would do some crazy thing, like you would somehow times it all together and end up and it'd be like, the number would be 67. Like, oh, you've got 67% chance of marrying each other.
Yeah. I used to love it when like I'd go and sit on the table with the girls in primary school and they'd show me some of this cool stuff, man.
Yeah. Cat's Cradle, I always thought had a, you know, with the strings and it, and you'd have to unwind them and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I need to show you a semi-gimmicked version of something that I've been trying to make for about a year and a half. And it's the with the paper, you know, where you have the paper folded up and you go like this.
Oh yeah, left, right, or red, blue, color, pick a number, pick a number. I seen a cool version of that from Danny Garcia. No, it's not gimmicked at all. It's not a gimmicked one at all. It just relies on a cool principle so that it's not going to expose the method, but basically, like, I think something like they all win or they all lose.
Oh,
but,
right.
Like, you make them pick one, but it's not gimmicked. It's just the way it's set up.
Yeah. I want to use it to force stuff.
Oh, dude, actually, that'd be so good if you could do that.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been trying it for ages. I've got 3 origami books over on the shelf there. I read through every couple of weeks trying to figure out the best way to do something, how to make something. I mean, I've tried it with flaps and I've tried it with magnets and I need to get it to work properly.
We should brainstorm it. I mean, if you plan on keeping it private for a while, we could brainstorm it off air.
Oh, no, I don't care.
You know me, man. Elastic thread all the way, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Elastic thread it.
Well, that's one of the things that it's a bit hard to brainstorm. Go on.
What if the theme was... right, I'm just going to throw the method out there. So maybe it's something like... Because when you open it on the inside, it's got like numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Right? And then finally, so once they get to like the color, the number, then they choose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. You open up that flap, which always has 2 numbers on it, right? It has like the 7 and the 8, the 1 and the 2, the 3 and the 4, the 5 and the 6. And you show, oh, look, you picked number, say 6. And that has this answer here, right? Like say the answer is horse.
Mm-hmm.
And you could show all the other answers with like, maybe it's all like the star signs, mm-hmm. or whatever it's going to be. Or like the Chinese calendar animals or whatever there's 8 of. I don't know. But the method I'm thinking is that you the game is fire and ice themed. Maybe Game of Thrones, who lives, who dies. So you have 8 characters, 7 characters who are dead, 1 that's alive, maybe.
Right.
And so the symbol of alive and dead is just a cross or what symbol? That would be dead, right? What symbol for being alive?
Circle,
maybe. Either way, use a friction pen.
Yeah.
So then you can burn away all the correct, incorrect answers, but whatever the shape is hidden inside the shape of the one that you were gonna. You know what I mean? So like. You know how like a spade has a heart hidden in the shape of it and a 3 has the number 8 hidden in the shape of it. You know what I mean? You just do something like that with a normal pen and then you, whatever the theme is, you say fire and ice, fire and ice, fire and ice, da, 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 alive or dead, alive or dead, alive or dead. Finally, pick a number. And then you say, oh, look, and here's the fire. Ha ha ha, just a joking bit. But that actually cleans you up and now you're forced. And then you hold your fingers over the number so that you burn everything off around it. Maybe
test it out. I think stuff like that, that's it's going to be so hard to jam over Zoom. Next time we get the chance to meet up, I know that there's going to be an hour of trying to figure something out with a piece of paper and elastic thread.
Wouldn't it be cool to play a game like that and it's water dissolvable paper? So it's designed water dissolvable paper and or flash paper.
Mm.
And whatever, say like, the, you know, AirPods is the answer out of all the answers. You keep the thing in the position, like the,
yeah.
I don't know what it's called. And then you just produce whatever they think of from it. So it's like in the center. It was so crazy how you picked AirPods because that's inside there.
Work.
So you find a way to force the, because the force item, you could either force the number or you could have them pick any number freely. And I'm thinking like, you know, if you could somehow rotate the numbers to always land on the force item within the, inside this game. Is that called a cat's cradle? What'd you say? It's not, is it?
No, cat's cradle is the one with the
strings.
Yeah, I think.
I don't know what it's called.
I don't know what that's called either. I used to just call it that paper thing.
Do you ever used to do that game where you'd put your fingers together and then split them and open them and look inside?
Yes.
It'd be so funny to do that and then have like a really disgusting picture like between your hands. Yeah. Like looking like, oh, yeah. Oh!
what was it? It was like, here's the church, here's the steeple. Do you know that one?
Oh, yeah, that one. Here's the church, here's... I don't know, it was something like that, wasn't it?
And it was like, look inside and there's the people.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to do it with like hot dog fingers. Like, or imagine just like dropping all them fingers out of your hand. Like you open up like this, and they see this array cool. of fingers, and then they all fall out.
That'd be fun.
That'd be good.
Who's the guy who does a lot of that kind of shock effect stuff? What's his name? Is it Johan something?
Oh, man. I know Toby does some stuff with it, like with like mirrors
yeah.
and things. And I've seen Justin Lom do the, you know, the one with the middle fingers either way. Yeah. And the, actually he had like these, it was a plastic middle finger going out and you could pull it away.
It was a DVD know. Like 15 years ago.
Oh, Freak. I know who you mean.
Was it called Freak or something?
No, the guy's name, Yigal Miss... Not you guys, it where he does like finger fantasies and he could pop his middle finger off and
it yeah. Right. It's like there's finger like bone breaking effects where you have like you can make the noise and stuff.
Johan and his brother, Mengel.
Yeah, yeah, those guys are great. Like they did eye popper with the coin coming out the eye and stuff.
Yeah, that was completely gross.
Yeah, it was great.
Right, now I've got to type in finger fantasies into Google and pray that the FBI do not turn up. Mia Yeaded. Yeah. Right. He's a guy who could do all the crazy finger manipulation things.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the other guy is who had a DVD. I'm sure it was called Freak. And I remember watching
Will
that.
Houston. Will you bend your little finger?
Yeah. I think that is the name.
Dr. Will Houston, apparently.
That'll be it. Yeah. That was so cool.
Yeah, that was great. That was.
I was obsessed with that stuff.
I don't think I ever really did it, but it was good. It was good fun.
Yeah, really fun.
All right. Well, I we're trying to keep it tight. I think we're at like 40 minutes. So should we do some readers' cues?
Yeah, hell yeah, man. Would you prefer I start with the one or two on emails or your SOS Discord?
Surprise me, baby Jake.
Okay, awkward. okay. Is it Daniel Rothschild?
Yes, Dararo. Yes.
Dararo asked, if you had to perform a trick silently, which one would you do?
Do you have an answer?
It's a tough one for me because so many of my tricks revolve around speaking and having that kind of interaction experience. I mean, I'm not the biggest, you know, visual magic trick creator or even user. It has to be something really good to kind of catch my attention. But if I had to perform a trick silently, what would it be? I mean, honestly, I think I'd stick with some kind of ambitious card routine.
I would probably, I've got a TNR called Restored. Mm. Out on the wire years ago. It was like a bestseller for years and
humble brag.
No, but it was like one thing. I just said it now because I completely forgot like how like well like acclaimed it was at the time.
Mm.
I actually should refilm that. And but that is self-explanatory. Like you all you need to do. I remember someone saying, it might have been Wayne Houchin said that he would do his TNR at nightclubs, where he would just walk up to someone and hold up a card and start tearing it.
Oh, that's
fun. Instantly it creates drama.
Yeah.
You know? So I'd probably do that. As I'm sitting here on my desk, I've got Hanson Chen's Hollywood, which
yeah.
You don't need to say anything. You could just like action someone to like look and then you just open it and pull out a piece of wood.
Wow. If only there was a way for people to win that. How could
well, if you listen to this, you have 24 hours left, actually. And you will win the other copy. Go to fooler.com, sign up to the mailing list, and you can win Hollywood from Hans and Chen. He gave me an extra copy. If you haven't seen last week's Fooler episode, go and check it out. You guys will enjoy it. It shows you all about Hollywood. But yeah. I'd probably do something like that, man, like a TNR or, yeah, like a Hollywood or something like that, because I think the TNR works well because you're starting to create drama.
Yeah.
Instantly. I mean, depends on what silent is as well. Like, is motion into someone's hand, asking to hold it out, when you have to be like,
yeah,
point in, that's true. Does that come under like the silent thing because you are instructing them? Like, do you mean silent as in like you're just performing silently or audience involvement? Either way, a piece by piece restoration, it really is a great piece to do in that scenario, I think.
Yeah, I think it holds attention well enough without any kind of dialogue or scripting.
Yeah. Also, there's a great one, Mark Elsden's Limelight. They actually read the whole script. So if it's not a silent performance, in general,
technicalities.
Technicalities, maybe.
That's a really good answer, actually. I feel a little bit silly because I'm so out of my depth when it comes to a purely visual performance.
Hard Warp's a good one.
What was that, sorry?
Hard Warp.
Which one's that again?
Roy Walton's, where you take one card, you wrap it around the other, and as you push it, it inverts in and out, in and out.
Yeah.
That blew my mind the first time I seen. Blew my tiny mind.
if I was a much better versed magician in card magic, I mean, you know, I've got all of the traditional books, but contemporary card magic, I'm sadly very lacking. There's a very few people that I kind of follow and purchase their work with contemporary card magic. So I wish I had some cooler answers. I just can't think of. It's truly stumped me. I rely so heavily on being able to jazz and being able to riff through speaking to someone and, you know, pull myself out of holes by speaking to someone. And
you would be a better performer in the dark than I would be.
Excuse
me? That sounds... I beg your pardon. And we're back to touching tips.
I mean, that's true. That's an interesting angle to take, but I don't know. Well, you say that. You're fairly accomplished in a decent amount of bloody mentalism routines. You've filled me with a fair few things that I had no idea about.
I am less than rubbish at mentalism. I'm terrible at it. But that was a great question. Really thought-provoking. And now it makes me want to refilm Restored. At least for the Society of Secrets.
Mm. It's very strange because Daniel asked that question and about 10 seconds after, David Peace asked, what are some of your favorite mentalism techniques in loud environments? Which is a fairly
mentalism related. Techniques in a loud environment. That's a good one.
It is. It's interesting because the immediate cop-out answer that I would use was I would not attempt anything if someone couldn't hear me.
Would you not?
I wouldn't be able to keep their attention on me, so there'd be no point doing any kind of an effect. And a lot of tricks require at least some of the script to be followed and heard and paid attention to. And the whole point behind an effect for me isn't to show someone something where they do the classic Ginger Kid in the David Blaine video and go, cool. Like, that's not the point of the effect for me. The point of the effect is the interaction itself. So it holds no draw to me to be like, look, take a look at this. Yeah, that looks cool.
But it's, you know, if you're performing to somebody who's deaf, I suppose it could be put under as the same thing. Yeah. I guess really you could, you know, it's quite common that billets will sometimes instruct people what to write, where it says, so you could just hand someone a pen with a billet that says, write down your star sign, fold this billet up, do not let me see it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's some instructions. So in a loud environment, you could hand someone a billet, a pen, you take a step back, at which point then you're going to incorporate some sort of a peak on that billet. And then you can just like, or a drawing duplication. It could be a very simple drawing duplication where it's, you give someone a pen and a card, and it just says draw a simple picture here, and they draw it, and then you know, you can use a bunch of different techniques to, you know, I quite like the idea of like incorporating a phone where you could literally write on your phone screen, think of like, you know, you could use a like a boon writer,
yeah,
thumb writer on your hand, and then someone, you could say think of a number, could write it down on a post-it note, and then just instantly show it to them. That sort of stuff is really simple. They yeah. obviously do need to be able to hear something, but I think asking someone to think of something as opposed to giving them instructions to follow and procedure is okay.
There is, you know, a kind of definitely ways to accomplish it. I think maybe I was answering it a bit too much from a personal perspective of why would I want to do that? Because I did that when I worked in nightclubs for years and years. I did that, these unsatisfactory experiences where someone maybe didn't get the point of the effect, didn't get the trick, but I had lived and breathed and died into smoking areas. Take me outside to the smoking area, and that is where I will stay there the whole night.
Do you know, one cool one would be, because I think there's one thing you could do, at least one thing you could do, which would instantly start off the interaction without you having to say a word. And you know where I'm going to go with it, what the effect is going to be. But imagine you're in a noisy club, Jake, and I walk up to you.
Woo!
I walk up to you and I do this. Okay, so I'll explain to everyone that's listening through a streaming service what I do after. I want to do it very quickly. I'll walk up to you and go.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Walk up to someone, you point. So what I'm doing, I'm pointing to someone, pointing back at myself, and say you versus me, and then rock, paper, scissors symbol. Once you start doing that to someone, they cotton on, and it's just fun. It's innocent. There's no, they're not thinking that it's going to, like, you're going to end up, I don't know, whatever it's going to be. Maybe they think you're going to end up saying who's going to buy a drink, but it's quite fun to walk up, say, without saying a word, and just say, count down with your fingers, 1, 2, 3. Boom. And then, so you play, maybe you do, so you say one, then you do a second round and a third round. Pull out a piece of paper and you predicted the order of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it works, doesn't it? I think I'm suffering from looking at things from a personal perspective, and you're looking at things more logically, like, well, this is what you could do. So I do apologize for misanswering your question, David.
How many outs is there for predicting a game? 3 games of rock, paper, scissors. Because you know what you're going to pick every time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say it's paper, paper, paper.
Yeah.
Then they can choose 1 of 3, 1 of 3, 1 of 3. But then the paper you'd have would have a combination of those 3 in any order. So is that 3 to the power of 3?
Rich spoke about this last episode, and the way he explained it, I still didn't understand.
Not odds, but how many outcomes can it be? Oh, he did?
He did.
This is why he's a genius.
Yeah, I know. Didn't he say that there was only actually 6 outcomes when I thought it'd be 9 or something?
Was it for
rock,
paper, scissors as well?
It was for something where there was, I don't know. It was, what was it? It was the 3 colours.
Okay. I was thinking that in my head then, damn, I'm a complete thief. Deal like an artist. But yeah, no, what would it be? Well, you could just write on every permutation, really, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Because they could go paper, paper, paper. They could go paper, rock, rock.
Mm-hmm.
Paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah.
And then so that's paper, 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 rock, rock. Oh, each one's one. Paper, 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 rock, rock, paper, rock, scissors. And they could do also paper, scissors, rock. Right? So that's 4 outs.
Paper, scissors, scissors.
Oh, paper, scissors, scissors. That's 5 there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could be rock, paper, paper. Well, it's 5. That's 15 outs. Do you need?
You're asking the wrong person, Louis. Every episode.
3 or 25. I don't know. I'm on the spot. And I'm also, like I said earlier, on the very lower end of the bell curve of brains and intelligence. So
I literally have
Rich,
a
just type in the
brain
comments.
Injury, Lloyd.
Yeah. This is supposed to bring out the best in you.
It's steam coming up my ears.
You've only
right
let
now
yourself down.
Yeah, every day of my life. But I like the idea of that, you know, predicting the outcome. And it's a bit weird. It's a little Charlie Chaplin-esque walking up to someone and being like,
Yeah, it kind of is. It is. But we've got to answer the questions, Jay. We can't just cop out, you know?
Well, I cop in, cop out.
Cop off. Okay, do you want another question?
Yes. Your man Relish asks a question. And this would probably be specifically for you, really. He said, what frustrates you most about creating and releasing magic effects?
Well, I mean, you've released Sigadex so far. So you've had it, you know, you kind of dipped your toe.
I have some farts in the wind, yes.
What frustrates me the most? Probably, like, people who purchase something complain that it doesn't work, but they haven't watched the instructions. So then you have to send them the timestamp and the instruction. No, people who purchase something complain it doesn't work, leave a bad review of one star that it doesn't work, and then go back and watch the instructions, but never remove the review. And that happens so much with Cognito, specifically. It happened a lot with Maxim because people wanted that instant play and they just didn't watch it. But because Cognito is a little bit more complicated in terms of how it worked, there was a solid few people that would leave negative reviews on Facebook groups and stuff. But luckily, the community got behind it and would like correct people quite a lot.
Yeah.
But it happens with so many products that people just go off before they understand something.
Yeah.
And then you get other things like the reason I deleted my Facebook is entitled people. So I'd wake up in the morning every day on Facebook, I have at least 20 to 30 inbox messages, like from you, like unique messages from people.
And, you're going to say from you then?
Yeah. No, but every single day of my life, at least in the last like 4 years, it would get up to that much before I deleted Facebook. And I know the names of these people, but I would wake up to like a barrage of messages from like sent at like 4 a.m., 3 a.m. in the morning. Hey, this is not working, X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah. Respond to me now or you're a thief. You've just stolen my money. I mean, some people got really abusive and I'd have like Facebook missed calls.
Yeah.
And I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh, yo, sorry, I missed your calls. I'm in the UK. What's the problem? And then I just say to them, oh, yeah, it's at the 36-minute mark in the tutorial. You know, that's probably the most frustrating thing. And then the other one is like, obviously, I think it's the same for every person that releases, is that reviewers that have like personal vendettas or are not like fully informed.
Yeah.
Because anyone can review these days, you know. So everyone, before, a long time ago, reviewers would be trusted people that have like, that had got themselves into a position of as a reviewer. I'm not talking about Craig Perry or anyone, but like, not even reviewers, I'm just being like general commenters. Like someone, I don't even talk about my own tricks, but I've seen people put like years of work into stuff and then they'll release it and somebody will just trash it in a Facebook comment.
Yeah.
And those people can often have either A, not even bought the trick, or it's a trick that will potentially require audience management skills. And it'll say in someone's ad copy, this requires audience management skills.
Yeah.
And then a person will destroy it. And then you'll go and watch a video of theirs and you'll realize, oh, this guy is not qualified to leave a review on so-and-so's work. And it's like, so a lot, like everyone is, I think, I don't know whether it's my own thing, but I give, Katie says I'm so gullible. Like I never believe so. I always believe someone when they say they're not a serial killer on like a TV show. And it's the same. I always assume that every person until I find out more about them. But I always think like, oh my god, this person knows their stuff. I'm like quite gullible, naive. I think probably is the thing. And I always need to remember not unless, like I said, because I haven't released a lot in the last year. I don't think I've released anything in the last 12 months. But I see stuff on like the Magic Cafe all the time of people. Who will just go off and tear people's work to shreds and they're just not qualified to do it. And I said, you know, like is I know the argument is you haven't got to be a comedian to know if somebody's telling a funny joke.
Yeah.
But if somebody, you know, writes negative comments or reviews about people's work, and you know what I mean? And it's just like, yeah. So I think there needs to be like a gold standard of, or like a sort of universal standard for who's taken seriously as a reviewer. And I also don't think that you're eligible to have your review taken seriously if you do not perform it in that review. Because if you perform it to someone who's a genuine layman, whatever the trick is, everyone watching can tell if you've done it correctly to know if he's performed that correctly or not. And B, people that I find so many reviewers will review tricks, not perform them, and just assume that they're bad tricks because they don't like the method.
Yeah, which is weird, because if you've spent any amount of time purchasing effects, I'm sure it's the same for you. You ever picked up a book or an effect and you think, this is crap. This is not going to fly. And then you show it to someone and they love it.
Dude, I have it on camera. I had the Super Sharpie the Perfect Pen by John Cornelius sent to Murphy's. And I just don't like that pen through trick, right? Or I didn't. So I wanted to perform it on Fuller. So Kaylee'd never seen it. I just assumed that nobody else. That Kaylee would be like, it's just, I'm not going to say the method, but it's just the method.
Yeah.
And I wanted it. That was supposed to be quite a fairly important episode to show a few things. That A, even though it's not a Murph, even though it was a Murphy's product, that if I do perform a Murphy's trick, that you're going to see honest feedback.
Yeah.
And B, that Kaylee was being genuine, you know, because there was over the year or so, there's been a small handful of people that thought Kaylee was in on it or faking it. There's only one place Kaylee fakes it. That's the bedroom. And anyway, I showed it to her fully, really wanted. I had this whole like angle of the show at the end where Kaylee wouldn't be on screen, and I would talk about how it's good to try out every trick because you don't know whether it's good or bad or it's going to be good. And I really thought it was going to be a bad performance, and she was going to just see through it. And to this day, it's still one of the best tricks she's ever seen. It's still one of the ones she talks about. And that showed to me that I can't trust my own opinion. I can say whether I like the type of effect, but I can't trust my own opinion on what's a good effect or not. So when you see these reviewers like throw people's work down the toilet, but with no performance in the review, I instantly go back to that. And I think your review is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
You're saying someone's got a bad trick and you haven't performed it. You don't know what it's going to do. So.
I think that's why I really, really like Craig's reviews, because also from the other side of things, he will say, this is a decent trick. The effect is really good. It blew so-and-so's mind. Never going to perform it. Not up my street whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is important.
Craig's one of the honest ones, because Craig, Craig works a lot with Murphy's Magic, Penguin Magic. He has trashed some Murphy stuff. He has trashed some Penguin things.
Yeah,
and I think it's important to be completely impartial, unbiased, and honest. And there's some reviewers that just aren't. You know who's a good reviewer as well is Tyler Lunsford.
Yeah, he's okay.
No, but he stepped up and he started doing performances in his videos, and he quite often isn't afraid to call stuff out either. And considering for like someone who's up and coming in the industry, it's quite like hard to call things out when they shouldn't be. So fair play to Tyler. And then there's other reviewers that do it just to create controversy and views. And they call things out, but it's like, you're doing it, you know what I mean? So it's a fine thing to balance. But for me, like reviewers that are not qualified and don't perform, that's another tricky thing.
Yeah.
But I've gone off on a whole tangent. I could talk about this.
No, it's cool. I mean, I for the most part, unless it's something where I'm about to pull the trigger, I stay away from reviews, because it's the same as movies. Sometimes I like to form my own opinion. And for the most part, I stay away from critics who are too obsessed with being critical. Because people do tend to lean into the, this is that restaurant reviewer who gives the awful reviews. And you can sometimes become a character where that's your selling point, the fact that, I'm so sharp with these reviews. And I try and stay away from reviews for the most part, and I'll base my opinion on like an aggregate of like four reviews, maybe.
Yeah.
Real criticism died the day that Roger Ebert died.
For me, I mean, where I'm at now in Magic, I pretty much know if I like the trick or not fact before I buy it. I'm such a considered purchaser, even when it comes down to like just a new deck of cards, which I very rarely buy.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm getting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the reason that I will look for certain reviews is usually when there is an unknown quantity, like how many actual routines are taught for this gimmick, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Or the quality of the prop.
Yeah. Yeah. How disappointing is it when you open something and it's cack?
Yeah.
Such a bad feeling, especially if you spend like 50, 60 quid and you're just like, oh man, this is trash.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, just releasing in general, like my thing, overall thing with that is that I don't, it's what any other people's opinions of me is none of my business. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't have Facebook. Every Magic shop has customer service reps, and and Murphy's has a customer service department. All the FAQs, the questions should be, because I'm one person.
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky and really fortunate. And I don't know if this will continue, but thousands of people buy my products. You know, I know a lot of people can't even sell more than like 30, 40. I know how fortunate I am to be in this position. But I think it's the healthy option to just not be accessible to thousands of people. I drowned with like Cognito and things when Lux, it was just, I've never seen anything like it. You know, so for me, I think put the trick out, do your best with it, give the FAQs and any questions to the customer service teams, but step back and let them, if it's a good trick, it'll rise to the top. It's as simple as that. You can't force it to be a bestseller.
No.
You know.
Good answer. The
strangest thing ever, I put out a trick years ago called Change, right? It's a terrible marketing campaign that went with it, but it was just a visual color changing gimmick, good for video. I perform it in real life. I got videos of me doing it to foreign people that can't even speak English. And there was chaos online because this terrible campaign that went with it, that was supposed to change the face of Magic, not my idea. people were expecting a real miracle. And when they got it was just this like sort of basic thing. But it was one of those, it was the fact, I can't say the amount, but it sold out of like thousands upon thousands of units overnight. And for all the people that were kicking off on the Magic Cafe on it, it was only ever 14 returns.
Nice.
Only 14 they must people have asked for their money back. So it could have
thousands of in stock.
Pardon?
They must have had some confidence in it for there to be thousands in stock.
Well, actually, the company that made them shut down because it was overloaded with orders and they couldn't. And then it was just too much and they turned that part. It was a big company that did a lot of stuff like that, and that department actually shut down and never reprinted those stuff since because of Change. That's how many of it there was. But for all the uproar online, like the lynch mobs and whatever, only 14, exactly 14 people ever actually didn't like it enough to not keep it.
Hmm.
Which I thought was quite telling.
It kind of speaks volume in itself, doesn't it?
I mean, like, 14 out of
a good amount.
Thousands. It's crazy. Anyway, next question.
Next question is through the emails at theblackartco.com, if you wanted to send an email, or team@theblackartco.com. And this is from Lucian Lawson. I think I saw him also comment. I think he posted a similar comment on the live chat for the premiere of the last episode. But he said that, well, it's specifically addressed to you. Hey Lloyd, I came up with an effect while listening to one of your Black Art episodes, but it involves a spectator's card bursting into flames. Only problem is I can't figure out how to make that card catch on fire. Anyway, love the pod, and I hope you can answer my question. I think in the live chat, a few people gave him a few tips, but he was still looking last time I checked up on it.
Well, This is a tricky one to answer, because with an effect like this, which is just like, oh, this is just the plot, which is a very common plot. Thousands of magicians want a card to just burst into flames.
Yeah.
Right. It's one of the most common when they just say, oh, if you could create a card trick, what would it be? A common answer is, I would have a card just burst into flames. Another one is, I'd have a card just tear itself and things, or have a card just vanish. So it's quite a common one. So the tricky part with answering this question is that if I tell you how I would do it, that's not your method.
Yeah.
It's not your trick then. It's the way I would do it, which is my creation. You know what I mean? So it's a very, very tricky one. But what I would say is look to what exists out there for. There's a type of chemical you can get which will just ignite itself. Mm-hmm. I think World Magic Shop a number of years ago. I mean, they weren't the first at all. It was in the Anarchist Cookbook.
Yeah.
But there's a material. It's called Combustion by Matthew. Something with through World Magic Shop, and it's a match that will light itself on fire. So very simply, you could just go straight down that route and have that happen. And then you have other methods, like you took apart like a fire wallet and then had the igniter, the little thing, and doused the card in lighter fluid in your pocket, and then when you bring it out, you just spark the flint behind it, it would light on fire. So you've got a bunch of methods like that, but it's very hard to answer that question, because if I tell you my method, that's not your method then. Mm-hmm. Like you know what I mean? It's very much my thing, but that's the way I would go. I think just to help you out with the chemical, I'm going to search here, Combustion, I'm sure it's called Combustion by Aaron Jones. I got the name Matthew wrong. I do apologize. Yeah, and it was a dead match reignites itself in their hands. So they hold a match in it and it ignites itself. And the reviews are not too great on it, but it basically just details you the correct chemicals that you need to make it happen. So it's definitely an option there.
Yeah, a lot of experimentation, right? But Lucian has commented on a lot of the podcasts lately, so thank you, dude. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you to everyone that comments, by the way. Me and Jake we're talking this, because this is purely a passion project. We're not doing this for any views, any following. Like, this is just for me and Jake to force ourselves to have a creative jam weekly, because we're just not doing it enough. So anytime someone interacts, we're massively appreciative of it.
Yeah. The final question is from a lovely guy, Andy O'Neill.
Oh, I love Andy. Yeah, yeah, great.
He's great. He lives not too far away from me. We got to meet up in Blackpool in a House of Secrets for a little bit.
He showed me a really smart creation, actually, there.
Yeah, he was telling me about a couple of ideas.
Don't spoil what it is. It's very, very good, though. He needs to make it reality.
But him and his missus were lovely. But he said, hi, guys. I feel I'm becoming more creative since becoming a member of the Society of Secrets and listening to the Black Art podcast. But my problem is I perform mentalism, but when trying to create something mentalism based, it's not really happening. I've got about 3 or 4 things I'm working on that are magic related. So do either of you have this problem, and how do you get around it? At the end of the day, I love being creative, but I really wish I could create something I could perform myself in terms of mentalism. Thank you, guys. So Andy's super creative when it comes to magic, but he seems to have a little bit of a hard time creating something mentalism-based, even though that's what he loves to perform.
Huh. That's interesting. That's an interesting conundrum to be in. I kind of empathize with that when it comes to, like, when I used to do consulting in the past, when they'd say, right, now you're going to do, we need you to make somebody levitate. And like, levitations is something I'm just not interested in. And I'm okay, now I've got to force it. So what's your advice, Jake, on creating new mentalism? Mentalism?
It's such a nebulous, vague, weird, like, thing, because it literally involves brute force. It's sitting down and thinking. It's a really, really strange process to go through, because as with a lot of things, it's 50-50. It's half, okay, let me go through and test everything, every possible solution. And then the other 50% is sitting on a park bench and going, oh, wait a second. And it's the same with magic in a lot of ways for anything magic related that I come up with. It's a weird mixture. You have to put in the work, but then you have to be open to get inspiration from anything else. And I think you also have to kind of be willing to adapt what the effect is to suit your method.
Yeah.
If you start off with a pipe dream and you can only figure out a way to get halfway there, sometimes that's as far as you're going to get until a later point in time. So, you know, it's okay to start small. It's okay to start with one phase. Oh, if I get someone to think of this number, then I know that I can force this. And you're just slowly building on top of it and figuring out where the right amount of levels is on it. But it is, I find it hard to create mentalism effects. It takes a lot of, I'm going to sit down for an hour and a half and think about how you can get someone to think about this one thing. It's a really vague concept to explain. There's probably some amazing workbooks on creativity that could be applied to it. There's probably some amazing mentalists who've released stuff about it. Darren Brown's got a new mentalism book coming out soon that might answer a few questions.
I'm buying that first in line.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, first thing I consider is think about the mentalism plots. I would say, right, I was thinking that I would think about creating the things that other people find interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not interested in horoscopes and star signs, but people respond to it like crazy. I've spoken about it too many times, but it's one of those tricks that I do. It's kind of like a SpongeBob's trick. It's like the SpongeBob's thing to me. It's like SpongeBob's don't appeal to me in any way, shape, or form, but they get crazy reactions.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, if you're working on creating a mentalism piece, it's so much harder to create something that you're not enthusiastic about. So if it was like, if you realize people are into star signs and you're not trying to force yourself to create something, star sign related is not going to hold your attention long enough to get you through those creative slumps. So first thing I'd say is, like, think about the stuff that excites you, the type of mentalism that excites you. Is it a drawing duplications? Is it revealing someone's pin numbers? Is it mentalism where you have all these crazy, like, cryptex type reveals where it's like words that are upside down numbers and things like that? Find out the stuff that interests you the most, because that's going to be the easiest thing to create and work on long term. We do it with Murphy's. Is like when we're looking at new products coming in, and there's always a 5-man vote. And my thing is, which I keep reiterating to the team, is if, you know, if we're like, listen, are we going to be still excited for other people to see this in 6 months' time? And if we're not, if it's not a hell yes, if it's not hell yes, then it's hell no.
Yeah.
So you've got to be excited about whatever trick it is first, instead of trying to force the trick. So find whatever excites you, and I'd start there. And then I'd say, keep it stupid simple, not keep it simple stupid. Mentalism is such a funny field where the most basic of methods destroy people. So start by taking, say it's a pin number reveal. Find the most basic pin number reveal that maybe you don't even think the method's going to fly, and test that out. Right, go back, write some notes, write what you don't like about that method. Maybe you don't like the fact that they have to write down their pin number on a piece of paper or type it into their phone, or the fact that they even have to acknowledge their pin number outside of their mind in any way, shape, or form. Whatever it is, but start stupid. Start on the worst methods. And then find what you don't like. There's two types of creators, or there's more than that, but there's the potter and the sculptor, right? The potter will create from nothing and the sculptor will chip away.
Mm-hmm.
So take something stupid or bad or obvious that excites you, perform it a few times, and then write down what you don't like about it. Now you have a little, I find creativity much easier like this now. Now I have a topic that excites me, and I have a checklist. So now you're not creating this trick from nothing. Suddenly it's like, okay, well, I gotta solve this problem where I don't want them to use a pen and pencil on a piece of paper. So I've got to solve that bit first, and here are the other points. And suddenly it's much more methodical to solve. these problems. So I'd say do that. And then the last thing I would say is people watch. And I know, like, I should post the masterclass in the Society of Secrets. But then watch people. Don't do any magic. Don't perform anything to them. But find ways of observing how they interact with their PIN number. Jake's putting his hands over his eye like binoculars. But see what people do when I don't know if you say it's kind of hard to do, but you look at, observe the natural things that people do when it comes to PIN numbers. Like, somebody might feel very uncomfortable writing it down, so already the alarm bells are going off. But would they, like, if I said to you, Jake, write down your password to Facebook on a piece of paper, you'd be like, what? No. But if I was to say to you, Jake, like, don't tell me anything about your password, but roughly how many letters long is it, just so I know the ballpark, you're kind of like, oh, that's not too bad. I don't mind telling you that bit of information. There's no way you could know anything from that.
Yeah.
And look at how people feel about when they get asked these certain questions about certain things, or how do they type it? Do they hold their phone tight to their chest? Or I don't know about PIN numbers. It could be anything. If it's when it comes to thinking about countries, look at how the way they talk about it, the way they describe stuff. And it's much easier to do this with magic tricks. But then you've got a baseline, which is doing the stupid version. You also have a checklist for yourself to solve certain problems. But then the last piece of the puzzle is you also now have some blocks that maybe some mentalists aren't looking at, which is, how do people actually interact in the real world? So in the Coin Masterclass, I talked about very briefly that if you ask somebody to hold out a handful of change, or if you ask someone to swap you a pound coin for 250 pences, I won't give away what they do, but people will, I won't go into the full mechanics of it. At least in like when I'd go to bars and stuff around here in Wales, people would keep their hands close to their leg with a handful of change out of fear of spilling it. Mm. And when I watched people do that, I asked loads of people to give me change or swap a pound for change for me. They'd be in this very awkward and seemingly unnatural position. But what I realized was to everyone else, to all normal people, not magicians, that is the most natural position.
Yeah.
And from there was a big, big zone of exploitation that magicians weren't touching upon, which give me this, for my own personal beliefs, not in an egotistical way, but it's the perfect coin vanish, because I'm suddenly not acting like a magician. So they're not even on edge when I start to take that coin from my hands. They're not suddenly going, why is he holding it like? And it's the same with mentalism. If you start acting like a mentalist and doing mentalist things, then they're going to be suspicious. But if you start acting like them or doing normal things, then it's like, for example, you could say to someone, I got a blue background on my screen. What color is your black background on your screen? And then as they do that, you just watch them type their PIN number in. But they say, mine's red. Oh, cool. Leave that for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Go off and do something. You say, and they'll probably forget about it, right? And then you've peaked their PIN number or whatever it is. But it's that is much, if you're thinking, well, that's too stupid an idea, they're going to know that you looked at it earlier on. Is it more stupid than having them write it down on a billet and then peeking the billet, where they go, well, why did I write it down? Yeah. And you think, oh, actually, you know what? Maybe there is something there to exploit. That moment of casually asking them a question unrelated, you just get the information on the off chance and go from there. And, you know, the same thing, whether you're going to do like a name, place, location, or whatever it is. Just start thinking about how people move and interact and consider things. So that's what I would say anyway. I think that wasn't too
whimsical. Pretty much everything that you said there, I agree with. I completely agree with starting off crude and not being afraid to use common methods as a placeholder, even. Mm. And you work out ways to add subtleties or obfuscate methods, or you work out everything afterwards. Just get 1, 2, 3 in place.
Yeah.
It's super important. And having your own principles or checklist, like you were saying, that you apply to stuff, I think is a really great shortcut to get things out a little bit quicker, to get the ideas in your head a little bit quicker. I mean, I have like 5 or 6 principles that I follow with everything that I make, and it does streamline the process a little bit. thinking, mm-hmm. oh, I know I need to hit that point because I always hit that point, and that's something that I find important in creating an effect. It is a really strange one, because there's also the possibility that everyone has completely different way of thinking or a completely different way of creating. And you in that sense, you also have to find the best way to create for you, because the best way to create for you might be
completely
picking up a book and looking at what the first method is and saying, maybe I can do something similar to that.
Mm-hmm. And another good thing, I remember Eric Jones saying this, and this is something that I would do because I was poor, but he would say, pick up a magic book, and in this case, a medalism book, read the effect, don't read the method.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then create your own method to it. And if it doesn't match, and you can't find anyone else's in it, congratulations, you just created a new trick. And it's easy to think, I wonder how he did that. I wonder if he did this. And then you end up, that happened with me before a few times, where I'd see something and I'm like, I think it's done with this method. Just because I had no other answers in my head. I was just problem solving. And then I'd seen the method and it wasn't what I had, and no one else had done my one. And it's like, oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, find someone to jam with. Yes. It makes it so much easier sometimes.
Yes. Start a black art podcast or black art jam session.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Andy, who asked the question, has asked in the past if I'd be up to jam with him. And I definitely am, Andy. We'll sort something out soon. We'll go meet up in a coffee shop somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great, man. If only you lived in Wales.
Wales.
Wales, boys.
I'm literally on the border.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You're on the cusp.
On the cusp of puberty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not far at all. Although a public apology. Oh, you are, actually. Public apology to Sam Sugarman for missing his show on Saturday, because I couldn't get that far down south into Wales in the appropriate amount of time.
Yeah, that's like a 9-hour bus journey, was it for you?
Yeah, it was 9 hours on a megabus, or a ridiculous price for a train that I wasn't paying.
Was that all the questions? Or
I believe that was all the questions, but if I missed any, then I'll just add them on to next week's.
Okay, cool, man. Well, run slightly over.
Whoops.
As always.
We can never keep it tight.
That's what she said. I'm sorry. Oh, well, that was a really good session, man.
Yeah, that was fun. I hope you didn't find my initial kind of subject I wanted to speak about a bit too weird or boring. No, I hope people who are listening didn't find it a bit weird.
Well, I don't care. We're not doing, I love our listeners, but this is for us, so I'm juiced.
If anyone did actually like it and are still watching or listening right now, what should they say in the comments?
Oh, you can decide this week.
Okay. If you are still listening or still watching, however you are consuming this podcast, you should probably comment on...
Jake is on the cusp.
Jake is on the cusp. Go on, why not? Because I can't think of anything else. Jake is on the cusp of brain injury, so...
Jake is on the cusp, ladies and gentlemen. All right, guys. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll be back here next Wednesday. Go and join the Facebook group. It's the Black Art Podcast.
Yes, please. There's some cool discussion in there.
Go and check out the website, theblackartco.com. Send us emails, send us questions. Don't forget to comment down below on YouTube. Jake is on the cusp. Or on the Facebook group, if you'd much rather do that. I've been Lloyd.
Jake.
We'll see you guys next week.